on this one. Introducing my man, B. Howard.
I don't need a reason to groove all night. Long as I got you, babe, by my side.
Welcome to Wish Upon a Star. This is Ann Dale Banks, your host. Wish Upon a Star is an exciting program that showcases participants in the diversified arts arena. We will discuss with professional guests about songwriting, entertainment law, copywriting law, publishing, recording studios, promoters, communications, and other topics of great importance relative to the highly competitive industry. Today, ladies and gentlemen, our special guest and honored guest is Mr. James B. Moore Wharton. Mr. Wharton is an artist, and his biography states that he has researched and explored one of the top issues and concerns in society today, relationships. I suggest you get comfortable because you don't want to miss a moment of his in-depth conversation. Mr. James B. Moore Wharton was born in Baltimore, Maryland, attended Baltimore City's public schools, studied accounting at Morgan State University and Georgia State University. He is an ordained minister, a chaplain, and a spiritual advisor. He has counseled many couples on the true dynamics of relationships. He has worked as a prison chaplain and served on their ministerial staff at Hopewell Missionary Baptist Church in Norcross, Georgia, for 8 years. He currently resides in Ellenwood, Georgia. Mr. Wharton has written a book that's a must-read for both men and women, entitled, You Have Been Hoodwinked. In this book, the reader will find a compelling argument on the proper etiquette of relationships that will eventually and factually dispel a lot of the so-called relationship experts' advice on relationships. Where these so-called relationship experts have watered down the true guidelines to conform to the ways of the world. We want to say welcome, James, to the show.
Thank you, Andel. Thank you for having me.
Because we have so much to cover, I want to make sure we get to as much of the information as we possibly can. In your book, James, if I might call you James.
Yes, it's fine.
You have mentioned in your book entitled, You Have Been Hoodwinked, that often these so-called relationship experts are confused when it comes to relationship guidelines. Please explain this aspect.
Well, first of all, once again, let me thank you for having me on the show. It's an honor to be able to dialogue with you this afternoon. So let me start by saying that when it comes to relationships, it's been stated time after time that men are the breadwinners of the family. This is an ancient belief that has come down from century to century to century up to the present day. And that's a fallacy because you have too many women nowadays that are more successful financially and are more able to be the breadwinner in the family than what men are. And this is something that, like I said, has been promoted century after century. And it's just a fallacy. When you look at it from a biblical perspective, women were designed to help men. They're not supposed to be a doormat The man is not the ruling, not supposed to rule over them. Women have an opinion, and this is out of, these theories come from people misappropriating biblical scriptures and using them to their benefit in the way that they want to use them.
I see. And I think a lot of people might, or certainly will agree with that aspect of who is the breadwinner, but maybe not some of the other aspects.
Well, I'm not trying to indoctrinate anybody. I'm just stating my position. People are going to believe what they want to believe anyway. But if you look at it, like I said, you have women in Congress. You have women that are CEOs of major corporations, and they're just doing darn good, to be frank about it. And they're actually the breadwinners of their family. And just because they're the breadwinner doesn't make the man less of a man.
Right.
That woman did what she had to do to get where she is, and men need to learn how to give women the credit where the credit is due. And I mean, if you look at it from a biblical perspective, all she's doing is she's being me. A woman is nothing but a man with a womb. She was created from me. So why would I have a problem with something that was created from me being more successful than me? And she's only fulfilling her role is to help.
Exactly. I think society, based on what you're saying, is slowly seeing that fact that you can be a stay-at-home dad and still be a man.
I don't have a problem with it. If my wife is smarter than me and she makes more money than me, I don't have a problem with being a stay-at-home dad. I'm just going to be the best stay-at-home dad there is out there.
Exactly.
But it's not going to decrease my manhood, because my woman is a reflection of me. When I look at my woman, I see me. So why would I have a problem with her being successful? I need to get on her team and be her a main cheerleader. I can't go by what people went by 200 and 300 years ago.
Exactly.
It is what it is. If she's the breadwinner, she's the breadwinner.
Absolutely. Also, you speak to the fact that certainly, James, no one wants to experience too many painful inequities in life before we actually get it right, if we ever do. Therefore, what are some of the mistakes made by most of us in relationships that possibly could be avoided?
People put the cart before the horse too much. And what I mean by that is this. We go straight to the bedroom. We don't do any type of evaluation or investigation of our prospective mate. If they look good, if they have a nice car, they have a nice job, then that's okay. And we just go and we just jump straight to the bedroom. And then one day you wake up, you marry this person, and you realize you got a monster next to you. You didn't give it any time whatsoever to find out anything about this person. It's just straight to the bedroom. And if they can knock the boots, then that's the one, and that's how we determine whether we're in love with somebody, and we go for it. And that's just not the proper procedure when it comes to determining on a lifetime mate. Determining a lifetime mate is a very serious thing, and we take it for granted. I don't think we really look at the seriousness of what we're getting ourselves into. And let me elaborate on that a little bit. When I choose a mate for my someone to be my wife, I'm giving her the authority of everything. If I can't make a decision on my own and I'm on my hospital bed, then that spouse has the authority to make a decision for me. And that's something that's really important to me as a man. Now, I wouldn't have thought about that as a boy. But as a man at 51, that's something that I have to consider, because I need to know whether or not that woman has the ability to communicate with those doctors on my behalf. And even if she do have the ability to do it, is she the type of person that will make the best choice for me? Because everybody don't have your best interest at heart, even if you're married to them. So these are some of the things that we need to consider when we talk about getting a lifetime mate, when we decide on having someone for a lifetime mate.
The important issues of life.
Yes. I mean, Say again, Andel.
The most important issues in a relationship and in life.
Yes, I mean, the physical is going, and we'll get into that a little bit more, I'm pretty sure. That's
right.
Going to take care of itself. It's going to take care of itself, but, I need to know, if I choose this woman as my spouse, can she educate my children? Because ultimately, it's the parents' responsibility to educate their children. Is really not the school's responsibility. It's the parents' responsibility. And if my spouse does not know what a prepositional phrase is or a misplaced modifier, then my children are not going to know. And these are some of the things that I consider when choosing someone to be my spouse.
Excellent, and you're absolutely correct. And starting off with your book, just give us a general idea. What does the title "You've Been Hoodwinked" really relate to when we're talking about relationships?
Well, you have people who call themselves expert relationship counselors, and actually, there's really only one expert relationship counselor in the world, and that's God. I am an ambassador for God. Being an ordained minister, I speak on behalf of God. I speak what he tells me to speak. And these so-called relationship expert counselors have been misleading people and giving them false doctrines as to the proper etiquette on relationships. And when I see that as an ambassador or a defender of God, then I have to step up and speak out against it. You know, it amazes me how people can call themselves Christians, but they will not go to the Christian manifesto to find solutions to their problems in their relationships. They will rather go to somebody else who bears a title, who has the appearance of a relationship expert, before they go to our manuscript and find the solutions that they really need. Because look, God created us. And since he created us, who better to go to for answers to our problems? He has the proper tools, equipment, everything to fix fix the problems that we have in our relationships. But still, we go to other people. We won't even take the time to study God's word to really find out what is the proper way a relationship is supposed to go. We'd rather go to some fly-by-night relationship expert counselor and see what they have to say. And if it sounds good, we roll with it. And then later down the line, when you find out it don't work, you realize you've been hoodwinked. You've been duped. You've been tricked. You've been fooled.
Hoodwinked.
You've been sold a
right.
pipe dream.
Exactly. But two, do you make any kind of differentiation or percentage six on one hand and heaven on the other when we know it's all entertainment?
Say again? I didn't hear you.
When it's all entertainment aspect of some of these so-called relationship experts, it's really just entertainment.
Yes, it's just, you know, their motive, you have to look at their motive for giving the advice that they give. You know, I'm not going to badmouth anybody, but their motives a lot of times are not pure. They're not holy. It's some other underlining angle that they have for giving the type of advice that they give. Anything that's contrary to God's word is a fallacy. If it's not in line with God's word, I don't care what title you have behind your name, it's a fallacy. It's not good information. It has to line up with God's word.
Definitely. You also, James, you also point out to us that there are major ridiculous theories concocted by these so-called relationship experts. What are some of these theories that you really take to task that they tell people?
Let me give you one that's really popular now. You're familiar with the phraseology that men like to hunt. Okay, meaning that when it comes to who is supposed to pursue the other party in a relationship, because the man has the aggressive nature, he likes to be on the hunt. He likes to be the predator instead of the prey. But mm-hmm. if you look at African tradition, okay, the boys are the ones who hunted. The men stayed back at the village. The boys hunted to prove that they were capable of taking care of a woman, taking care of a family. Once they captured that one particular prey that right. would define them as a man, their hunting days for that purpose was over. So here's what I'm telling you. If you have a spouse, and you're married or you're in a relationship and your spouse is still out there chasing other women, then what you basically have is you have a boy stuck in a man's body who has failed to transition into manhood.
Mm.
And that's what you have. And that's what a lot of the sisters are dealing with. They're dealing with boys who are stuck in a man's body and have not yet captured that one prey that makes them a man to transition into manhood. And it's stuck.
Well, where does that initially come from? Can we say that's parental guidance or peer pressure or a certain characteristic that they'd like to be like a big daddy type thing? Where does that encompassing character to make them to go forward in that type of direction?
Well, you have to look at something. When you talk about African Americans, and I'm just going to speak from an African American perspective, you have to go back to perhaps maybe between 1980 and 1985, where we had such a large population of men who were absent from the family.
Uh-huh.
And they abandoned their women. We abandoned our women, and we left our women to try to raise these boys into men and help them transition into manhood. And the women did the best job they could, and I give them their props for it, but it failed. And this is why uh-huh. we have a lot of misguided young men today, because they didn't have anyone to help them transition over into manhood. Now the frightening thing for me is this. These same kids are now having babies.
Hmm.
And so they are incapable of helping their sons transition into manhood. So if we don't get a grip on this at some point, it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Hmm.
You know,
exactly.
The brothers,
we can, yeah.
Yeah, the brothers just need to step up.
Yeah.
We need to have a mass effort into trying to get a grip on these young African-American men and really teach them how to be men. You know, because you even have fathers who encourage their son that in order for them, this is our way of telling our sons they are men. Go out here, find your young woman, steal her virginity from her, and now you're a man. That doesn't make you a man. And we encourage our young men to do this as a way of proving their manhood. But that doesn't prove they're men at all.
I think a lot of focus is being put on that now with the different organizations that they have, that the fraternity of men are helping these young boys just with that, James, what you're talking about. Then we also have in our midst where some people may say, well, these young boys would say, I came from a background. They might say that they graduated from the world of hard knocks, and they think they know a thing or two about life and relationships just because of the environment. But you want us to know that there is a difference when you compare worldly relationships and godly relationships. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes, it's a vast difference. Worldly relationships, basically, now the way we perceive what a successful relationship is really based on materialism. If I marry somebody and we both have a nice car and we live in a nice big house, we got money in the bank, wear fine clothes, then, you know, that's a successful relationship. We view that as a successful relationship. And then if you really pull the covers off of that relationship, you'll see the hell that's breaking out within the race. Nobody in the family is even happy. You know, a godly relationship is just pure. It's undefiled. It's holy. It's not based on materialism. It's based on just the family. A man's number one priority when it comes to a holy relationship is to keep his family together. That's a successful relationship. If he can achieve just keeping his family together, it's not based on just because I may have more materialism than the next man doesn't make my relationship more successful than that other man's relationship. It's pure. It's undefiled.
I can remember way back in my day, and that's a long, long time ago, when my parents would tell us, the girls, I have another sister. And I remember her saying that. Of course, then I didn't know what she was talking about. But she was saying, any woman can lay down, have a baby, and get a man, but all women can't keep a home together. So I think that's basically somewhat what you were saying, because that's what my parents told me. That the most important thing for the woman is to make sure that she can keep a home together.
Yes.
So that's basically what you're saying. Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's a man. My number one priority as a man is to keep the family together at all costs. That's what makes me successful. Not how much I can do for them, not how much money I could spend on them. Because if you look at it, you've seen stories in the past where successful actors and stuff like that, children have committed suicide, and you know they get divorced, and you know, so that if that's the determining factor of a relationship, we're losing. You know, because though if that's what defines a successful relationship, then we're losing, because that's not what really keeps the family together.
Plus, it's already been proven. Yeah.
Huh?
It's already been proven.
Yeah. It's just pure, unadulterated love that keeps the family together.
Well, you're very good in telling us these things, and you give us straight off the plate, you know, no whole lot of sugarcoat it. And you advise us when you tell us to stop being duped by those who cloak themselves in the garment of relationship intelligence. What are some of these challenges and these myths permeating society today on relationships that you say we need to know the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Well, I talk to a lot of, I have a lot of girlfriends, and some
say
of
that
them.
Again?
I have a
oh,
lot
you
of
mean
girlfriends.
Friends of girls who are friends. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, well, not me. I have a lot of girls that are friends, just like you said. But in my circle of female friends, some of the things that they talk about is, and this is one of the most ridiculous stories I've ever heard in my life, don't be physically intimate with a man until you've been out on at least 5 dates with them. I call that the 5-date rule. And to me, that is such a low standard for a woman to place on herself to determine whether or not it's okay for her to be intimate with a man. You know, it's just, well, you know, when I heard them say that, I was baffled, you know, because these are and I can say that these are intelligent women, and this is their rule that they go by, you know. Now that I've been out on 5 dates with them, it's okay to give them some. And that's just such, to me, that's just such a low standard.
But even when you say it, it sounds disgusting.
Say it again?
Even when you say it out of your mouth, it sounds disgusting.
But it's true. It's a true theory that some of our sisters have. Not all of them. Nowhere near all of them. But it's out there. And it's a rule that a lot of women go by. And no one is confronting them on it. And it's such a low standard. It really is. You know. And then another theory is, you know, people try to explain what it takes to get a man. Okay. What does it take to get a man? And typically, from my experience, and this is what frustrates me, I have a lot of women that I meet still approaches me as if I'm a boy. And what I mean by that is this. They think that their physical appearance is going to be the deciding factor as to whether or not I date them. And that's not it. I have been there. I'm 51 years old. I have been there and have done that. I heard one young lady ask me a question. What is it that she can do sexually to her man to make her man fall in love with her? I'm going to say this to my sisters. It's absolutely nothing that you can do sexually to make me fall in love with you. I have been there and have done that. You're not going to blow my mind by anything that you can do to me in the bed and vice versa. I'm not going to blow your mind by anything that I can do to you sexually in the bed. You just can't, love just doesn't work like that. That's not love, that's sex. That's just sex. That's what it is. It's not love. But it's still out there. You know, I mean,
so they're trying to make it a catch-all. My catch-all is that the way I look, like you said, when you have the big dressing provocatively, or that I would go up, way up and beyond to please you sexually. Those are not the two factors that anyone should be bringing forth when they're finding a relationship.
No, it's not. You know, That's you know, when you dress provocatively, that's dressing in a certain type of way. That's not going to get me. You have to look at it, right? I'm gonna be honest with you, Andale. Can I be honest?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, look. I started watching porn at 11 years old. When I say I've been there and I've done that and I've seen that, I'm 51 years old. That's 40 years. What is it possible that a woman can do that I have not seen already that's going to blow my mind and make me fall in love with her? I just don't get it. You have to come to the table with more than your physical body to make me fall in love with you. It's just not going to happen physically like that.
Well, you know what that comes from. That comes from what they were taught, that that's what gets the man. So you're both battling a mirrored image that doesn't work. She thinks that's what gets the man, and the man thinks that's not what gets him. But that's
not
the
man
thinking.
That's what gets a boy.
Yeah, well, okay, not a man, right. Okay.
Not a man. Right. No, you can win a boy over with that, but you're not going to win a man over. Not a 51-year-old man like myself, anyway.
Right. Because you're not thinking the same way.
No, it's just too many other factors in deciding on whether or not a person is going to be my mate to make that the defining factor. It's just not going to happen.
Okay, well, let's step back a little bit. Okay, let's say you're out on a date. Of course, the first thing that you possibly did to have that date was that, what, she was attractive. Is that correct?
Yes, physical attraction, yes. That's normally the first attraction.
Okay. Now, you're not going to know whether that woman is educated, her politic views, her political views, or anything. So how do you go about that? Do you continue to date that person to find out these things, or do you do an investigative checklist or after the second date? I mean, you know, because you can't tell. The person still may be dressed as provocative, but she could have a PhD, you know.
Yes, she could be, but you have to, what you do is you engage people in different types of conversation. You engage them in different social settings. You have to, that's why I say you can't put the cart before the horse.
That's what I'm saying. Give us in our listening order some points as to how do you go about, because I know a lot of women, like I told you, had already called me and they wanted to ask some questions. But we're going to talk about that later because we're going to have a forum on this. And they want to say, what's number one? Number one, you're saying engage in certain aspects, like go to certain, is that what you mean? Go to certain environments to see how they act, how they talk.
Yes, one of the things I look, and this may not ring well with everybody, everybody might not agree with this, but one of the things I look at when I'm deciding on whether or not someone I want to date is the way they sit, you know, the way they dress.
Mm-hmm.
Those are indicators. Those are really good indicators because there's a difference between a lady and a woman. Okay? A woman is a woman because of her sexual orientation and her age. But a lady is something totally different.
Right.
And for me, this doesn't work for everybody. This is just me. It's certain things, like I said, that I look for when I'm trying to determine whether or not a woman is a lady or not. And two of the clear indicators are, for me, is the way she sits, whether she has on a dress, whether she has on jeans or whatever, and the way she dresses are clear indicators to me. And, you know, the way she handles herself in certain, in different situations. And that's why I say you have to involve, you have to engage whoever you're dating into different social settings and see how they function.
All right, fine. James, what we're going to do is take about a 7 or 10 second break, and we'll be right back.
Okay, I'll be here.
Let's get loose.
District.
Yeah.
That. What up, y'all? Just came to your city to say what's up.
What up?
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Show me love.
Show me love.
Hey.
Hop off the plane to a new show.
What up?
And all the shorties, they be waiting on me. Thugs packing they pistols. But ain't nobody aiming on me. Got a pocket full of fresh dough. So you know I got a bacon, homie.
Bacon for me.
And I'm thankful. Get whatever you want, it's on me.
It's on me.
New songs on the radio.
Hi, and welcome back to Wish Upon a Star. This is Andale Banks, your host. And we're broadcasting on BBSRadio.com Station 2. You can listen to all of our previous broadcasts in the archive link. We also welcome comments and suggestions at musicradio34@gmail.com. Again, that is musicradio34@gmail.com. Our honored guest today is James B. Moore Wharton, author of You've Been Hoodwinked. Going back to your book, James, it's written in the style like a courtroom drama with a plaintiff, defendant, witness, and you as the prosecuting attorney for the court. What theoretical paradigm the courtroom drama is supposed to invoke as opposed to the usual conference table panel discussion that you normally find?
What that does is we're to put relationships on trial. We have to put our method of choosing a spouse on trial. Do like Michael Jackson said, when it comes to your relationship, take a look at the mirror. Take a look at the man in the mirror or the woman in the mirror and try to determine your practices. Are you using good, sound judgment and practices in deciding whether or not somebody is going to be your mate or not? You know, who are you following? You know, what rule of law are you following when it comes to relationships? You know, so that's basically it. Just put yourself on trial. I'm not going to put you on trial. You put yourself on trial. And look at it and see what you're doing, if what you're doing is conducive to a successful relationship. And that's the whole thing. That's why I decided on the paradigm or the theme of a courtroom setting for my book, so that we can question our methods of choosing a spouse in relationships.
Oh, that's very good. We've got several questions here, so I want to make sure we can get as many in as we possibly can. My next question is one I think you just touched on maybe two or three questions ago, and it's still, I think, one of the hottest issues in a relationship conversation. And what is that? That is the betrothal period in a relationship. Where should it start, and how important is it?
A betrothal period is extremely important. That comes from biblical days when two parents got together and they decided that the son was going to marry the daughter. And so they had what was called as the betrothal period. Once they decided that these two people were going to get married, that their children were going to get married, that was a legal agreement, and it could only be broken through the courts, the court system. They had to go through back to the court, and if they didn't want to go through with it, to have that relationship broken. Okay, now the betrothal period lasted 1 year. It was for 1 year that these two people had to get to know one another. Now, to help people understand it, if you look at the birth of Jesus, when Mary was found with child of the Holy Ghost, the Bible says that her husband Joseph put her away privately so that no one would know that she was pregnant. Why? Because they were espoused to one another. Mary and Joseph was espoused to one another. And if it had been known that Mary was with a child, then the assumption would have been that they had physical intimacy, that they fornicated. And then back in those days, fornication was punishable by death. And 10 times out of 10, now they would have stoned Mary to death. And that's why Joseph put her away privately, because the betrothal period was used so that the two parties could get to know one another without physical intimacy. See, when you put physical intimacy in a relationship, it confuses people. We really don't get to know one another. And this is why I say you can't put the cart before the horse. You have to do the betrothal period. Sure, we can decide today that we're going to get married. I meet a woman today. We go out to dinner and we like each other a lot or whatever. Let's get married. But guess what? We still need to take the time to get to know one another.
Right.
Before we go jump in the sack and you know, knock boots, as they say. You know, we still need to get to know one another. And that's what the betrothal period was for. Mary and Joseph was in the period where they were getting to know one another. And that's what the betrothal period is.
Off the, just a general opinion, well, you can't speak for a woman, but what do you think when that is any truth to the point where a woman may say, oh, well, all I wanted him was for sex anyway? Do you believe that's true, that she really means that? I don't think so, but what do you think?
I guess that depends on the woman. You know, because you may have some women out there that's all they really want. Now what it comes from, I have no idea. But I guess it would just depend on the women. Some women really mean it when they say it.
Well, I was thinking by it from the psychology point of view. I love psychology, and I studied psychology. And I'm saying I disagree. I do not believe they really mean that. I really do. I think they just say it because, you know, it makes them feel a little less than they really want to feel. That's what I believe.
Well, they could be frustrated, too.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's
a lot
I mean,
of women
something
that
of that
hurt.
Order. Yeah.
You know, they're hurt. And so, you know, it's nothing else that a man can do for them. And so, but that's all that they want from them. And they could be hurt. You know,
yeah,
like I said, we've done a lot of damage to women.
Yeah.
And so what we have to deal with. You run across somebody like it, you have to deal with it because we did it.
There are a lot of important aspects and things in your book, and I know we're going to have you come back. But I'm going to skip over some of the elements in the book and get to some of the real nitty-gritty stuff. Like you have in there real-life issue and concerns about the fact that we all know there is an enormous difference between a woman and a lady. Well, tell us the difference and its significance in today's society.
Well, like I said, I think I touched on that earlier.
Yes, you did.
The only thing that makes a woman, is her sexual orientation and her age. When you turn 18, a woman is legally a woman. You know, but a lady is identified by her character. You know, her character speaks for her. And you will know a lady when you see one. It will be no doubt about it. You will absolutely know a lady. She will make sure you know that she's a lady. I'll give you an example. I was going into the mall one day, and there was two ladies that were approaching the door before me, and they stopped. and waited for me to come and open that door. There was no question that if I didn't know how to treat a lady, those two sisters was going to teach me that day how you treat a lady.
Right. Yeah, that is a good aspect, and we are taught that. Men are taught that from an early age, and women are also taught it from the early age. But I don't find that too much in today's society where men take off their hats, which is another pet peeve of mine that just makes my skin crawl. How could you go to dinner with someone and the man sits at the dinner table with his hat on? To even think about it gives me a headache. So we can also throw a man in there, too. When is a man a boy?
Yeah, it's a boy. That's a boy because he wasn't taught. Remember, early in the conversation, I spoke about young men not being taught how to be men. And so they don't, when you see that, they don't see anything wrong with that. And then the women that they are with are not calling them out on it. They're allowing them to do it. And a true lady is going to say something about it.
Absolutely.
She's going to say something. She's not going to let someone treat her like anything other than a lady. She's going to call them out. I mean, if they get offended, they just get offended. But she will call them out.
But they don't. Some of them don't. You also touched on the fact that boys like to hunt. Did you want to give some more explanation on that, or should we just go on to the next aspect of your contents of your book?
You can go on to the next, because I think we touched on that.
Yeah, we did touch on why boys do the things they do. Okay.
Right, when I spoke on...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because I spoke on that when I talked about African tradition.
Yeah, right. As a matter of fact, I saw a story about that where the African boy had to go in the jungle and kill somebody, and then when he came back, of course, he was the man. So that was very interesting. The family structure also has changed, James, dramatically from what we know as tradition, especially in a divorce situation and where children are involved. You state in your book, and I quote, "If he is meeting your kids before you have your ring and have set a date, it's too soon," unquote. Why is this extremely important in a relationship?
Well, because when you have children from a previous relationship or previous marriage, and you're back out on the dating scene, and you're dating someone else, you're trying to find another mate, I believe, and this is my belief, that it's absolutely not no reason that you should introduce your child to your prospective mate unless you have a ring. If that person has a ring on your finger and y'all have a date set, because you don't want to get into the situation where you're constantly introducing your children to different people,
mm-hmm.
because you're going to be cast, your children are going to cast you in a different light. They're not going to. They're going to look at you funny, you know. Hey, mom, and it's our fifth boyfriend, or this daddy 10th girlfriend, you know. And we are our children's ultimate role model. Let me give you something that happened to me. A girlfriend of mine asked me, "What do I think of her as a woman?" I told her, I gave her my opinion. Then I said, you know what? What's really important is she had a 16-year-old daughter. And I said, what you really should be asking is what do your daughter think about you as a woman? And the reason I proposed that question to her is because she was shacking up with a guy.
Ah.
And so if she's shacking up with a guy, and they're doing their thing, don't think that little girl don't hear what's going on in that bedroom. So you're showing her, you're her role model. She's showing that young lady that it is perfectly okay to shack up and knock boots with a man that you're not married to. So I told her, I said, when you come home one day and your daughter is in the batting room with her boyfriend knocking boots, you cannot say to her, what is your problem? Where did you get that from? Because she showed it to her. And that's something we don't consider. You know, and I live that out myself. I have a daughter, 22 years of age, and my daughter has never met any woman that I have ever dated. Because it's not important. Unless I'm going to marry you, if I have a date, if I got a ring on your finger, and I have a date set to marry you, then you get to meet my daughter. Then we can start your introduction process.
I know that's a wide subject to discuss. I know a lot of people would probably have a lot to say about that.
And they should, because it's not a good impression to keep allowing your children to see you with different people.
Yeah.
Constantly, it just isn't good. You're their ultimate role model. They do what they see you do.
Yeah.
And if that's what you're doing, constantly introducing them to different men, and guess what? That's what they're going to do 9 times out of 10 because it's acceptable. You've shown them it's acceptable.
Right. Okay, then we're going to take another little break so we can get some water, and I'll be back in 10 seconds.
Okay.
Welcome back to Wish Upon a Star. This is Andale Banks, your host. And I just wanted to ask you a question. Have you heard of the Motor Club of America? Motor Club of America is a wonderful benefit package that offers $50,000 accidental death coverage, $150 daily hospital benefits, discount on prescription, vision, and dental, 1,000 credit card protection, $5,000 stolen vehicle reward, and much, much more. All of these package benefits for just $19.95. If you're interested in taking advantage of these fantastic benefits, please visit www.mymcapro.com/Denise Banks. Or you can call 443-889-9422. Again, it is Motor Club of America, an all-encompassing package for $19.95. If you're interested, please visit www.mymcapro.com/Denise Banks or call 443-889-9422. We're going to welcome back our honored guest, Mr. James B. Moore Wharton, author of You've Been Hoodwinked. When we left speaking, James, you had talked about being too soon letting people actually be introduced to your kids, and your kids probably accustomed to that person, and I'm sure a lot of people can see the fallacy in doing something like that when you may have to have 4 or 5 different men or women to bring into your home. Again, another top question is, with technology and everything, people are talking more about cheating and different forms of cheating. We have many variations and degrees of cheating now in a relationship. But you tell us that, quote, there's no excuse for cheating, unquote. And that is based on what reasoning?
It's absolutely because we choose to do what we want to do.
Okay.
We're not forced to do. We've been given the choice from the beginning of time. Adam was given the choice not to eat from the tree, but he chose to eat from the tree. He wasn't forced. He made the choice himself. And that's what we do. You know, we choose to cheat on our spouse, but then we turn around and we make all the excuses in the world for cheating. For instance, I didn't know what I was doing.
Oh.
I was drunk. I had a little bit too much to drink. It just happened. You know, these are some of the ridiculous things we say to justify cheating, and there's absolutely no justification for cheating whatsoever. And then after we cheat, the person that we cheated on, we turn around and tell them, but baby, I love you. And as my understanding is, love brings you home every night. True love, anyway, it keeps you from cheating.
Mm.
You know, so when you hear these excuses, like I said, I was just drunk. I didn't know what I was doing. You knew exactly what you was doing. I've never been that drunk where I could say I didn't know what I was doing. You know, if there's a type of drunk like that, I've never experienced it myself.
Okay. Some people said, don't make excuses. Why do you keep making excuses? Some people make the excuse, well, men will be men. What is your theory on that? That is
men will be men.
Man's thing, that they can't help themselves.
Oh, you can help yourself. You just choose to do
I'm
it.
I'm talking, that's what people are saying so far as a theorization of making excuses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Men can't help themselves. No, you can help yourself. Women cheat too.
Yeah.
And we all cheat because we want to cheat. That's what we want to do.
Okay.
You can justify it any way you want to, but the bottom line is that's what you wanted to do. Don't make excuses.
There is no justification.
No, it's no justification for cheating. Absolutely none. It's something that you just wanted to do. Just say, that's what I wanted to do. And I did it. You know, and instead of trying to clean it up, you can't clean cheating up. It is what it is. You know, and if you cheat on me, it's over. I don't know about anybody else, but it's over. It's a done deal.
Right.
That's the straw that breaks the camel back with me.
Me too, because I feel if you do it to me, you go get somebody else, you're going to do it to them too. So, you know, go ahead. You know, whatever. Another kind of
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you're going to add on that. Go ahead.
Yeah, if you cheat once, you'll probably do it again.
Exactly.
So I'm not even going to run the risk of having, you know, because when you break that trust, it's done with me. I'm not going to lay up at night worrying about whether or not my spouse is out cheating. If you cheat, just keep on, just come home, pack your bag, and give me a high five and keep on going.
Exactly.
Because I'm not gonna lay up at night wondering whether or not, you know, my spouse is out cheating on me. Once you do it, it's done. Because I don't have that trust in you, and trust is the most important factor in a relationship. If there is no trust, there is no relationship.
Absolutely.
All you have is chaos.
Like I said, I love your book. And another highly controversial and important topic, especially when the family is encompassed into the scenario, is professional women, independent women, career-oriented women, and relationships. You say, quote, strong and independent women why not, unquote. And it's true because of what?
Say again?
And it's true because why?
Why not? I mean, like I said earlier, you got some very intelligent women out here. And you'll find that men, real men, can deal with strong and independent women. A boy stuck in a man's body can't deal with that. Because if you look back over history, a lot of our mothers were trapped in abusive situations where they were beaten at an inch from their lives and had to stay in those situations because they didn't have the resources or the means to get out and survive on their own. So their mothers taught their daughters that they didn't want their daughters to be in those same situations. So they promoted education to their daughters so that they could be strong, independent, and would be able to stand on their own and wouldn't have to rely on a man. And if they got in that situation, they could leave and just pick up somewhere else. They could leave everything behind. They didn't even have to pack a bag. And they could just get out of there and pick up somewhere else. And a lot of men can't deal with that because society told them that in order to be the man, I'm supposed to do this and I'm supposed to do that. I'm supposed to be the breadwinner. And they lose their control over it.
Uh-huh.
They lose their control, so they can't deal with it. You know, and I talk about it in my book. I even wrote a song about it. I don't have a problem with being a stay-at-home dad.
Uh-huh.
I don't have a problem with it, and I don't want to see a woman in a situation where she's being beaten and can't go somewhere and get out. She has to stay in that situation just because she don't have the financial means to get out of that situation. And
right.
That's why a lot of men, they can't deal with it. They can't deal with it. They're going on ancient theories of what the man role is and what the woman role is. And because some of these sisters are so powerful now, these men are losing their control. And they just can't deal with it.
Right. And they're doing horrible things to some of the women, too, just because they can't deal with it.
I'll
take a test of that. There was another part of the book. It's called The Supreme Court of the Most High, where you introduce facts for the plaintiff and the defendant and you being the defense attorney. I didn't know how to put that in any kind of phraseology for you to expound on that. We do have some extra moments because we started late. Can you give our listeners some idea of this portion of the book where you go with the fact that the plaintiff has written a book that's been distributed nationwide? Many women have used the defendant's methods and have found them. So what are the arguments of the plaintiff and the defendant in your court scenario?
Well, the court is very, like I said earlier, our relationships are on trial. And,
okay.
And the premise behind the Supreme Court of the Most High, The only relationship expert, like I said earlier, in this world is God.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that's contrary to his laws on relationship must be put on trial. And that's why I use the Supreme Court. God, I'm not the judge. God is the judge. The heavenly host is the judge. You got Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego up there, Job, Daniel in the lion's den. You got Jesus who sit on the right hand of the Father. You got the Holy Spirit. And they're putting our relationships, the methods that the relationship expert use in counseling people, on trial. And from research, they've given a lot of bad information that's contradictory to God's word. And so they're on trial. But the perspective of the defendant is that they have no obligation to the truth whatsoever because of who they represent. If you're not on God's side, then whose side are you on? The other only opposing force is Satan.
Yeah.
So that's who you got to be working for. If it's contrary to God's word, then you must be working for Satan. So y'all are on trial. And I'm just doing what God tells me to do. I have to. I have an obligation.
Right. And we should all be doing that. Yeah.
Right. I have an obligation. I can't sit by, because if I sit by and don't say anything, then I'm just as guilty as those who are perpetuating these fallacies and stuff on relationships. Especially when God has revealed to me that this is going on, and I sit by and do nothing and say nothing, absolutely nothing, then I'm just as guilty. I'll be charged just as well as them.
Is that one of the reasons why you wrote the book? What prompted you to write the book?
That's the main reason why I wrote the book. I was commanded to write the book. I had no choice in the matter. I had absolutely no choice in the matter. I had no intentions on writing this book whatsoever.
Mm.
Certain things were brought to my attention, and God said, "You're going to write this book." I didn't get a choice in the matter. And when God tells you to do something, you do it.
Oh, absolutely.
Regardless of how anybody feels about it, you have to do it. In spite of yourself, no matter what. He didn't say, James, I need you to write this book because you're perfect. He just said, I'm choosing you to write this book. I'm going to give you everything you need to say. Don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get people who question your authority to write the book. Don't worry about it. I'm giving you the authority to write the book. And so I wrote the book.
Yeah, because you do have one little note in there where you said, can you handle it? Can you handle the truth?
Can you handle the truth? And the truth on relationships are in that book.
Well, on that note, we're going to ask you to tell our listeners where we can get all the information, even because this is an international show, where you're going to have more book signings. So you can take this time now and to school us on the book, the purchase, and where you might be going, and what do you have going on in the future?
Right now, this book here is the first of a two-part series.
Okay.
The second part will be released somewhere around, You've Been Hoodwinked Trial Part 2 will be released probably right before Christmas this year.
Okay.
And I'm working on another book at the present time. But if someone wants to get this book right now, they can go to my website, totellthetruth.com. The word two in that website is actually the number two. The number two, tellthetruth.com. Or they can go on Amazon.com or BarnesandNobles.com and purchase the book. They can get it in electronic format, or they can get it in paperback format. And I'm working on a third book as well.
Oh, excellent. Well, can you give us a little sneak about book part two of You've Been Hoodwinked? What was that basically summarized?
Well, it's the same premise, but it's different topics. Well,
okay.
I talk about in part two of the book, I talk about a man prioritizing his responsibilities in the family. You've heard of the saying that when a man prioritizes his goals in life, he should serve his God first, his family second, and then he serves himself third. He meets the needs of God first, family second, and himself. Those are one of the things that I talk about in part two.
Excellent.
It's
mm-hmm. What I was going to ask.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Ando.
No, I just wanted to know also, do you have anywhere, maybe in the next couple of weeks, where you're going to be having a book signed in any state?
No, I don't have anything right now scheduled for book signings. But what they can do is they can, if they want to keep up, they can go on my website, totellthetruth.com, and sign up for my email mailing list. They can follow me on Facebook or Twitter. All of my information is on my website. And when I do have speaking engagements, then all of that stuff will be posted. And they can feel free to come out and dialogue with me. I'll be glad to have them.
Okay, that was some of the requests I had. Someone said, is he going to come here so that we can discuss the book? And I said, I'm sure he would be very happy to. So I'm putting out there also, if you don't mind, James, that if anybody wants to actually bring James back to Baltimore, anywhere in the Baltimore, Washington, and Philadelphia area, to have a little dialogue on his book, just email me at anvband2@gmail.com, and we can see whether or not we can have a sip, dip, and discussion. Again,
and that,
James?
Mm-hmm. And that will be great. And by the way, for the listeners, the phone number that's on my website is my actual phone number, so please be respectful of my number. That's my actual phone number. If you call that number, you're going to get me. And so if you want to get in touch with me, just go to my website. My phone number is on there. That's my actual number. Just be respectful of it. That's all I ask.
Right. James, it's been absolutely fantastic. Like I told you before, I could just continue to talk with you and talk with you. But we're going to have you back, certainly, once you probably get a little further into your part two of your Been Booked With. And I want to say again, thanks so much.
Okay, thank you, Andel. It's been a pleasure, and I'll be talking to you soon.
All right, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a little 5-second break, and then I'll come back to sign off.
And the sun is shining bright. I looked out of the window.
Welcome back. This is Andale Banks, host of Wish Upon a Star. We're broadcasting at bbsradio.com, station 2. You can listen to all of our previous broadcasts in the archives link. We also welcome comments and suggestions at musicradio34@gmail.com. In a closing note, ladies and gentlemen, based on our honored guest, James B. Moore Wharton, and his outstanding book, You've Been Hoodwinked, as said in our opening statement, we referenced that we are a confused people. After all the discussions have been heard, what do we do now to bring about real healing in relationships for the generations to follow and those yet unborn? When someone and some people won't even admit there is a serious problem. Again, this is Andale, your host on Wish Upon a Star, and your coordinator, Denise Banks, saying, keep reaching for the stars. Thank you.